The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Football Weekly on a defining weekend across the continent. Premier League, Man United extend their lead. Rooney scores hat-trick, then goes hat-stand, cutting out global audience. The pod wants to ask, do you kiss your grandmother with that mouth, Wayne? But then thinks better of it. We salute the weekend's winners and losers, marvel at the bizarre figure standing outside Craven Cottage and the Michael Jackson statue he put up, and hail Hodgson's West Brom, victorious with Liverpool, although Roy avoids words like revenge and retribution. We preview the week's Champions League quarterfinals, hear from Sid on a historic week in the Liga, and really go to town on Serie A, the Milan derby, Roma Juventus, a San Paolo stunner in Napoli Lazio, and the waiting is over, what actually happened in Chievo Sampdoria. All that plus posts and more in Football Weekly. Part one may involve harsh language, I should warn you now. But anyway, on board we have Sean Ingle.
Hello.
Hi, Sean. Barry Glendening.
Hi.
And James Horncastle. Thanks for joining us, James.
No, thank you.
Should we start with one of the most extraordinary games of the Premier League weekend, for all sorts of reasons, which was that West Ham-Man United clash at Upton Park. An incredible comeback from Man United, or was it, given that they do this all the time?
I don't think it was particularly incredible. Like you say, they do it a lot, but they were vastly superior throughout. Just got caught out twice with long balls over the top that their defenders weren't able to deal with. West Ham went two up. But, yeah, I wasn't hugely surprised to see them come back, and they won, ran out pretty easy winners in the end.
Vidic should have walked.
I don't think he could have had any argument if he had walked, but I can see why the referee didn't send him off, and it was probably the right decision, because the ball bounced high and may not have, you know, would probably have gone through to the keeper. But even Alex Ferguson said after the game that Vidic couldn't have complained if he had been sent off. I think it was a player on any other team, he probably would have been sent off.
Giggs at left back, that was one talking point. Rooney's quarter of an hour hat-trick, that was another. Back in form, Wayne.
He was. I mean, he played, we didn't do very much in the first half, and suddenly, you know, he caught light, and his free kick was fantastic. His second was superb too. And then, obviously, after his hat-trick, we had the outburst.
Yeah. Well, on completing his hat-trick, surrounded and embraced by his teammates, with the title now looking even likelier than ever, he basically asked viewers around the world to step outside. It was my reading of this. I've seen various versions of what he said, but I think anyone watching, as I was with my young son, heard him say, well, fuck off, and then ask, what? And then repeat.
Well, there's some suggestion that he was asked by a TV camera if he'd like to kiss the camera. But I don't know. Martin Samuel makes this point today, which I think is a very fair one. Why is Rooney so angry, having scored a brilliant hat-trick? You know, he should be celebrating rather than giving it this and all that. I mean, apparently he's going to be let off with a slap on the wrist and a fine. But if you take the FA's rules, the letter of the law, he should be, he should get more than that. I mean, it does say a participant should at all times act in the best interest of the game and ... should not, you know, use threatening language, abusive, indecent or insulting words or behaviour.
They don't write very well, do they, the FA?
I don't speak
punctuation.
It very well.
No, it's interesting. I mean, there is the issue of, you know, viewers who may have been offended, because it was a very aggressive act, not just the swearing, but the way he seemed to be directly addressing the viewer.
It's just the way football's going, isn't it?
Yeah.
Players are always angry and furious. Fans are furious. The background of a game on TV and all these faces twisted into rage and fury and hand gestures and V signs. So go to any, you know, internet forum, our own sport blog, for example, and it's just people who are enraged over nothing.
Where's the love, Barry?
Where is the love?
Where is the love?
Football is supposed to be fun.
Well, that's right. People scoring hat-tricks should be, you know, pretending to be a dog taking a pee or machine-gunning the crowd. Something joyful like that.
No, but I tweeted this a couple of weeks ago because I finally found Paul Gascoigne scoring against Luton. A brilliant goal in 89, I think it was, when I was there. And I remember at the time, a few of us, not many, you know, applauded Gascoigne because it was a remarkable goal. You don't see that anymore. You know, if I see someone score an absolutely incredible goal or do a remarkable act of skill, why shouldn't we applaud? Particularly if you're paying, you know, 48 quid or over 50 quid as you do at Chelsea or Arsenal.
Yeah.
Is it too much? I mean, should we really sit there morose and miserable? I mean, should enjoy ourselves.
I think we should. And there are a lot of people saying, oh, footballers swear, get over it. But they don't usually swear at me when I'm sitting on my sofa. But beyond the offence to me personally, which I'm obviously deeply upset by, I think there is the issue with his state of mind. I don't want to be, you know, patronise him or be a pop psychologist, but I think either he's actually a West Ham fan, which would account for why he was so upset, or possibly he's just drunk on his own ego. And I think that's the explanation I would go with, drunk on own ego. And I would cite the evidence of England-Algeria as possibly relevant.
Absolutely. When he said, nice to see your own fans booing you, it's what law support is, for fuck's sake. Forgive my language. What did your young son made of it?
I want to know what James Horncastle made of it.
I've never known someone to actively seek out the camera twice, as he's done against Algeria and then against West Ham. The only sort of thing I can remember is Drogba having his, it's a disgrace, it's a disgrace. Mm. And Maradona at the 94 World Cup, where he really looked angry and meh. But the thing is, I think a few people have pointed out that TV companies contribute so much money these days to footballers' wages that there is a responsibility on, say, Rooney's behalf to acknowledge that and abide by their laws.
Well, as you say, because it's not that they caught him involuntarily swearing on camera. He actually went to the camera to do it twice.
Yeah.
With a very aggressive what in between. Excellent. Good news for you, United, was, of course, that their rivals all stuffed up royally their fixture. Chelsea 1-1 at Stoke. Ooh, good call from Jonathan Walters, eh? Torres, this is a fact from producer Ben, Torres has had just one shot on target since he joined Chelsea. Interesting. They, of course, will be hosting Man United on Wednesday. Discuss?
Well, I find it quite interesting that Chelsea are favourites to qualify, and I can't really see why. I don't think Chelsea have played that well since October, and they've had the odd good result. And United, despite looking fragile and despite all these injuries they've had, still find ways to win, and you know, I'd have them over the two legs as marginal favourites.
Yeah, players coming back now, Valencia now back, and one with Nani on the other, and you think of the kind of pace they have up front attacking that Chelsea backline, which isn't the sharpest.
And David Luiz can't play.
Right. Not in general, you're not slamming him.
No, 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 just on Wednesday.
Right, okay.
That could well be a bonus considering how poorly he played against Stoke.
Right. What about Arsenal? 0-0 for them at home to Blackburn Rovers. And it could have been worse. You know, Manuel Almunia failed to stop that ball.
Well, every time he comes out of the six-yard box, you have the theme tune to the Keystone Cops playing in your head, don't you? He looks so, so dodgy. I mean, I think the obvious thing with Arsenal is they've drawn 0-0 now against Blackburn and Sunderland, the two teams that have been in the worst run of form. They threw away four goals against Newcastle. You pick up 6 points there, you're only a point behind United with a game in hand.
Right.
But they look absolutely shot at the moment.
The season could well now be over. This was the last point of interest for them in this campaign. You mentioned the stats. Rovers had lost 9 of their previous 10 on the road. Do questions have to be asked to the manager at this point? Are you going to, if you're an Arsenal fan, James, are you asking questions to the manager?
No, I think a lot of teams like to go to play at Arsenal, don't they? I think that since they've moved to the Emirates, away fans love going there. They find it really comfortable. And you don't know whether that sort of reflects on the players or translates to, you know, Arsenal players thinking, wow, this is wonderful. And they just, there's none of that sort of, you don't really feel intimidated, I don't think, when you go to Arsenal.
Hmm.
I think it's not exactly, it's a bit of an edifice complex.
All right, then. Arsenal, anyway, what are they now? 7 points behind United. City moving into third place past Chelsea, who, of course, then have Tottenham behind them in the race for fourth place. Man City, a 5-0 victory over Sunderland. And the big question now, what if? What if they've been playing this way all season? What if Adam Johnson hadn't been injured?
Well, they're not going to play teams as bad as Sunderland every week, so it's difficult to know. But, yeah, it was nice to see them play, you know, with as everyone's been describing it, with the handbrake off.
Mm.
And Sunderland were abject, absolutely pitiful for performance. And, yeah, the only surprise was it wasn't more than 5-0. It could have been into double figures and probably should have been.
A lot of people have mentioned the departure of Darren Bent as the kind of turning point for the Black Cats, because since then they've had, what, one victory? No, they've been defeated in 6 of their last 7 games. And
they've got 1 point out of 21. And their last round, they failed to score in 4 games or 440 minutes of football.
Right.
But
Bent, even without Ben, when they went to Chelsea,
is a perfectly good striker.
Yeah.
Welbeck?
Welbeck is good. You know, I find it difficult to believe that Bent is that huge a loss. He's a good.
So what's happened?
I just think the players sort of reached a stage where they thought, well, first of all, they beat Chelsea and probably got big heads over that and decided they were world beaters. Then they got, or they were at a stage where they kind of were on course to comfortably survive mid-table mediocrity and just down tools for the season. I just think it's pure laziness and lack. And it's up to Steve Bruce to turn that around, and he's shown no sign of doing so.
Did this happen last season as well?
Yes.
14 in a row last season, they went without winning the game.
Ouch.
You would have to look at the manager and go, maybe it's time for a change.
Hmm. All right, then. Well, relegation worry is not too realistic because they're still
seven. Have you been able to gauge the mood in the Bruce family at all?
No, there's been no contact neighbor? With the Bruce family since domestic arrangements changed in January. In part two today, we're going to have more from the Premier League, and we're going to be looking forward to Spurs' big clash with Real Madrid, and more from the man in Madrid, Sid Lowe. In other Premier League news, Spurs continued their woeful form against Wigan. They picked up 1 point from six with the Latics this season. A draw this weekend, 0-0. But perhaps Tottenham, what?
Well, I was just going to say, in their last four league games, Spurs have failed to beat the bottom four teams in the Premier League.
That's a fascinating statistic.
Three draws and a defeat. So that's 1 point from 12, where they should probably have got 10, maybe all 12. And although they were robbed against Wigan, they probably should have won that easy. Or no, West Ham. West Ham. But yeah, that they'd comfortably be in the Champions League place now. If
right.
So those games are arguably more important than the one they have coming up against Real Madrid.
Well, to be in next year's Champions League, but they're actually in the Champions League now with the chance to perhaps stay in it and get to the semi-finals. It is Real Madrid on Tuesday. And Sid Lowe now joins us on the line. Sid.
Hello, James.
Hello. Where do you join us from today, Sid?
I'm just actually at home because I'm just trying to finish off some writing.
What are you writing about?
I'm writing, as you can probably imagine, about Real Madrid being beaten 1-0 at the weekend by Sporting Gijón, which, of course, is the first time that Jose Mourinho has been beaten at home in a league game in 9 years. And just the kind of fate-twisting fun of the fact that it was Sporting Gijón that beat them. Manolo Preciado, the manager that more than anyone else has confronted Mourinho this year, that's had his bust-ups with Mourinho this year, is a guy that finally breaks his record. 107 coaches have tried to beat Mourinho in this nine-year spell, and it's Manuel Preciado who does it.
Extraordinary. What did Manuel Preciado do at the 90th-minute whistle?
At a minute whistle, he ran onto the pitch with his arms in the air, went absolutely bonkers, jumped into the arms of his players, who squirted him with water as if it was a champagne bath after a Formula One success. He was still wet when he came into the press room afterwards, and it's fair to say that he was absolutely delighted. It's a big win for them as well, purely in terms of Sporting's position in the league title race. But I think it's a sense of vindication as much as anything else that moved him at the final whistle.
Right, no swearing at cameras then, that's good. What did Jose Mourinho do at the final whistle?
Mourinho was quite interesting on a number of scores. I mean, he was quite interesting because he did something, and actually it was Preciado that pointed this out, and after everything that's happened between these two, you know, we're talking about a bit of a set to in the car park at Sporting, the fact that Preciado came out and called Mourinho a scumbag earlier in the season, that Mourinho accused Preciado of deliberately throwing the game against Barcelona to try and help Barcelona win the league and not let Madrid do so. So there's an awful lot of history going on. And yet after the game, and it was Preciado that pointed this out, Mourinho went to the Sporting Gijón dressing room and congratulated their players one by one and said, well done. After the game, he talked about what it means in terms of why he played the way he did, in terms of how he might play against Spurs. And I think, in a way, he sort of said more than perhaps he intended to. He said, you know, if I wanted to draw the game 0-0, I could have done. Which, of course, well, yes, he could. But in a way, it's Real Madrid's problem this year is that too often they've not had that slight cutting edge that they perhaps need. Certainly in a league in which a draw is pretty much a defeat because of the number of points that Barcelona are picking up, and Madrid have drawn against Deportivo, drawn against Mallorca, drawn against Levante, teams they really should have beaten. The other thing he said was, of course, that a 0-0 draw would have been a bad result, so he's forced to go for it. Against Spurs, it wouldn't be a bad result, 0-0 at home, and I think he's quite right, which is one of the reasons why I personally think the away goals rule has to be scrapped, and has to be scrapped quickly. And then the other thing he said, he had no choice but to be more direct, because they were very direct, because he said all of his creative players were missing, which isn't quite true.
All right, because who was on the field?
A lot of them were.
Oh, Ozil was playing?
Ophir was playing, Angel Di Maria was playing, Emmanuel Adebayor was playing. He had Esteban Granera in the middle midfield, although, of course, he's not as good as the man he replaced. But it is true that Marcelo was missing Cristiano Ronaldo, Xavi Alonso, and Karim Benzema. But then you look at the two teams in the pitch and think, yeah, well, Sporting Gijona had six players missing, including by far and away their best player. And with the resources that Madrid have got, it was a bit striking, really, to watch the way that Madrid kept on playing the same diagonal ball from a sort of inside right position, diagonally across to inside left, looking for Manuel Adebayor. One of the newspapers actually said they played like Stoke.
Huh. Interesting. In a good way, I imagine. What does this mean, though, for the Spurs match? Will they be employing Potter's-esque tactics against Tottenham this Tuesday?
Well, I think the question mark really is who's fit and who's available. And Mourinho said after the game that Cristiano Ronaldo has been told by the doctors that he can't play, and the same goes for Marcelo. He said, but if I play them, it will be because I decide to go over the head of the doctors and risk it. I think that was a very strong hint that he will indeed risk it, that he does want Cristiano Ronaldo there and he wants to be able to go for Spurs. But obviously, if he feels that in the end, Ronaldo and Marcelo are not worth risking, and as I say, personally, I think they will both play, then he's prepared to be slightly more defensive and maybe go for a 0-0 in the first leg and try and make sure he gets a goal at White Hart Lane.
Sid, Sean here. The bookies reckon that the 0-0 draw is 15-1 against. It sounds like you think it could happen. Do you really think Mourinho will play for a goalless draw?
I'd say I think it hinges on the presence of Cristiano Ronaldo and Marcelo to some extent. Also, of course, Xavi Alonso will be back because he missed the game at the weekend, not through injury but through suspension. I think it's difficult to say categorically that Mourinho will go for a 0-0 draw, although at the weekend he was saying that, so much as his priority will be do not concede. And obviously, if we don't score but we don't concede, then that's okay. So I don't think it's a case of trying to get a 0-0. I think it's a case of prioritising not conceding ahead of scoring goals. But again, I think that hinges on Cristiano Ronaldo. But yeah, I suppose a 0-0 draw is not necessarily that bad a bet, and certainly at those odds.
What are the Spanish press saying about Spurs?
Well, as you can imagine, the excitement really surrounds Gareth Bale, and I think, you know, it's easy to be cynical about it from an English point of view, but the Spanish who've watched Bale in the Champions League this year have been genuinely impressed by him, and they really do think he's pretty special. There's always the sort of giggling up the sleeve with Peter Crouch in a lot of the Spanish media.
And Van der Vaart as well.
There's also a lot of excitement about Rafa Van der Vaart, of course.
Yeah. Such a potent combination, those two. But they've got all sorts of absences at the back, no? Where you've got Gallas out, King, I think, is not fit, Woodgate's not fit. There's
King and Woodgate aren't fit, really?
No, but you've got, I think, four centre-backs out.
The Spanish were shocked by that as well. when the Spanish were told, Woodgate won't make it from a Madrid game, they go, no. Who'd have thought it?
Could see some scoring.
Dominic Woodgate, of course, those who don't remember it, had possibly the greatest debut you could ever imagine at Real Madrid.
Tell us, Sid.
Well, he was on the pitch for, I think, about 46, 47 minutes. He scored a sensational diving header own goal and then got sent off. And his post-match press conference was brilliant in a Wayne Rooney sort of way. But it wasn't an angry F-word, but it was a string of kind of, I don't believe it, oh my God, how could that have happened to me, F-words. To which, when he finished, we sort of stopped and looked at him and said, Jonathan, could we ask you this question again and see if you can say something we can actually publish?
Sid, magnificent stuff. Look forward to speaking to you on Thursday to see how all those games go.
Fantastic. Speak to you then.
Thanks, Sid. Sid Lowe in Spain. Of course, Barcelona hosting Shakhtar Donetsk on Wednesday in another big Champions League quarter final. Let's get back to the Premier League now. Many other stories there. Let's see. We could talk about Aston Villa. Whatever happened to their split dressing room? Big point for them at Goodison Park. Everton up to seventh. We could talk about Kevin Phillips. A word for Kevin Phillips, Barry?
Super.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's...
I love Kevin Phillips.
Yeah. It's a shame he doesn't get out more.
Yeah. He hasn't lost. Nope. You know. And Alex McLeish was going to great lengths to big him up after the game. Yep. I read something interesting. I can't remember where it was today, but... just about the number of shots on target he hits. And that's a really, at the risk of stating the blindingly obvious, getting shots on target, you will score more goals. But a surprising number of strikers don't do it.
Mm. All right.
Fernando Torres.
Yeah.
Fernando Torres.
Well, he's not firing any shots at all, I think, these days. So
he looked happy on the bench there next to Solomon Kalou, didn't he, the weekend? Kalu looked happy enough, but anyway, let's.
Well, the thought is that that's because they'll be playing on Wednesday night.
All right, okay. Let's talk about the statue outside Craven Cottage. Let's talk about Michael Jackson in all his living colour glory, 7 foot high, on a big granite plinth outside Fulham's home ground on the banks of the Thames. Let's talk about Mohammed Al-Fayed's remarkable comments at the unveiling, where some newsman must have said, it's a bit bizarre though, isn't it, Mohammed? Because it really is. If you haven't seen photos, check it out. One fan said it looks like it belongs in Madame Tussauds, or perhaps in a dustbin outside, I think was actually the quote. It's garish. It's not desperately lifelike. And sorry, Sean.
No, it is. It's the kind of pop equivalent of, you know, those horrible garish Christmas lights that some people hang out, and those horrible kind of Santa things. It looks plastic and cheap. And
it should at least move. The way it looks, you know, you should at least be able to put 20p in the slot and have it kind of moonwalk.
But it cost £100,000, though.
Did it?
Yeah.
Where is it located in relation to Johnny Haynes, who I'm very concerned about?
I have a feeling that it's located on the riverside of the stadium.
So like he's not right beside Johnny Haynes or anything, because that would be horrific.
Yeah, they now have to give the Haynes statue a touch of paint, surely, just to...
But the Haynes statue is very nice.
Yeah.
And the Michael Jackson statue... I would argue that if you own a football club and you want to put a statue of Michael Jackson up, then go for it.
I'm going to argue with you, Barry. Here are the quotes from Mohammed Al-Fayed, who you're agreeing with. He says, why is it bizarre? Football fans love it. If some stupid fans don't understand and appreciate such a gift this guy gave to the world, they can go to hell. I don't want them to be fans. If they don't understand and don't believe in things I believe in, they can go to Chelsea. They can go to anywhere else. So effectively, if I own a football club, that means I dictate the ethics, the beliefs of this football club. That doesn't make sense at all.
Of course it doesn't. It's absolute poppycock. I mean, he's a garish, horrible individual. And he's done good things for Fulham in terms of investment.
Right.
You know, if you're a Fulham fan that's been watching the club 50, 60 years, and you know, you have an objection to this horrible statue, well, why should you have to go and go to hell or go to watch Chelsea, or you know, have to listen to what your chairman says?
Exactly. Exactly.
Where do you draw the line?
Yes.
You know, what if he wanted to put up a statue of Gary Glitter?
I tell you what, I'm just amazed that it's not one of Princess Diana, the way that he went on about her and Dodie for years and years.
Well, his son died in a fairly mysterious crash. I think it's understandable he might be slightly obsessed by that.
He does have previous with bad statues, because I think there is one of... Is it Dodie and Diana at Harrods?
Is there?
Yeah. If you go to the toilets...
Right.
You might come across it.
Well, it depends what you're doing in the toilet.
Well, yeah, I think it's on your way. You'll stumble across it, and there they are, and it's not the greatest.
That's quite a tribute, because Dodie was a bit of a playboy, wasn't he, in his time? So.
Oh, dearie me.
Well, I heard a friend of a friend was having a party.
Right.
And it was Egyptian-themed. So they wrote to Mohammed Al-Fayed and asked him, would he supply like some Egyptian-themed stuff for their party. And about 6 Harrods delivery vans arrived outside the house full of Egyptian tat and hampers and booze. And so if anyone's having a party and you want some free stuff, it might be worth chancing your arm.
Well, that's good advice. I mean, clearly a very generous man then. In other Fulham-related news, that defeat, and it was a big defeat, or a big win for Fulham, Bobby Zamora, back in form on his first start since that leg break. It leaves Blackpool 1 point off the bottom three, as I think they were anyway. They could be bottom by the time of their next game at home to Arsenal if results go against them.
I mean, I think it's worrying the fact they've lost 4 games in a row and they've let in 12 goals, I think, in that time. We should... Also, though, you know, big up Bobby Zamora and the fact now that Fulham are only 3 points behind Everton in seventh, and given the sort of season they've had, that's some achievement.
That is some achievement. That is some achievement. Finally, from the weekend, apologies if we missed your team, it is a big league. West Brom and their victory, the Baggies continuing their unbeaten run under Roy Hodgson against his former side, Liverpool. And Gerrard apparently out for the rest of the season.
Oh, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, groin problem aggravated it on Friday.
All right.
I'm slightly perplexed, but Liverpool's... They've acquired Andy Carroll and haven't acquired anyone to provide service for him. Gerrard's probably the only person that could do it, and if he's out for the season, then you'd worry when is Carroll going to get off the mark. I think they should sign Joey Barton.
going back to the Rooney situation where you had him swearing directly to the camera, the sort of pitch side mics picked up that great Luis Suarez man scream at one point, I think he lost the ball. He was trying to recover it, went over the byline and just heard like that, which is an advantage to have pitch side mics. Rooney maybe not, Suarez yes.
All right, okay, you wouldn't want to miss on yelps or meows like that.
Greg Roughly insists that Jamie Carragher is the king when it comes to high pitch man screams. He reckons like even if you're at Anfield and however many thousands, 50,000-60,000 people in full voice, if Carragher gets hurt or slides into, you can still hear him scream above the crowd.
Oh, magnificent. Is, just briefly, a tactical note, is Andy Carroll the problem here? This is a Liverpool team that was looking so fluid and playing so well with Suarez and Count up front, with Carroll coming into the picture. Does that change the whole...
It's too early to say. I mean, Carroll's clearly not 100% fit. Liverpool, as Barry says, do need wingers to get the ball into him. But I would sort of reserve judgment on that, I don't know, until next season.
All right, then. Look forward to that.
I guess the problem of always having a big man up front is that it makes you a bit one-dimensional, doesn't it? And if you haven't got an option, you just boot it up to him.
Yeah. It's true, actually. You so often see this. You're probably thinking about Inter and Milan with Zlatan. Yeah.
Zlatan being the main...
The key
just
one.
Give it to Ibra.
The tactical black hole that is Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Good. That's it for part two. If you enjoyed that, you're going to love part three after this. Posts, Radici Jabolko says, woke this morning to hear Bosnia and Herzegovina have been suspended by FIFA. Can anyone tell me why this has happened? Barry can.
Well, they had three different sort of... Their FA was a three-pronged thing to cater for the three different ethnic divisions in the country, and FIFA will only let you have one.
Ah.
So it's a real tinderbox there.
Britain has, four, though?
Hmm?
Britain has four.
No, I think they had three presidents, and did they revolve? And they said that's it, because they had a Serb, a Bosnian, and
right.
a Croat.
Well, we have a Scottish FA, a Welsh FA, and why is that different?
It's meant to come under one umbrella of Bosnia.
Yeah, I'm just making a point about the British Isles sneaking around the rules. But
well, anyway, I think the general consensus seems to be that it's a very petty decision by the FA, or by FIFA. Because it's a bit of a tinderbox over there, and they were weren't really doing it. They were making the best of a bad fist of it.
Right. If you're curious, because it's the sort of thing that Jonathan Wilson might tell us about, fans of floating brain and jaw style tactical analysis will be delighted to know that Jonathan Wilson's very own special podcast is, I think, available at the moment, producer Ben. Yeah, I'm getting a nod on that. He's been looking at how Poland is changing ahead of Euro 2012. A lot of very bleak predictions about how that tournament was going to go. But Jonathan's actually been for a look and spoken to not only Gregor Zlata, but also Lech Walesa.
Mm.
So there you go. That's available. In other European news, Sean, I see St. Pauli's game with Schalke was called off after 88 minutes after a linesman was hit on the head by a pint of beer, or a stein of beer perhaps in this case. Pauli had two players sent off. I want curly hair too, posting and saying that St. Pauli Schalke game went a bit mad. Did the sausage train derail? He posts a link to this, the sausage train. Have you seen this? It's a train that goes around inside the stands, a little model railway, and in the carriages are sausages. I want to know how this works. It seems to be some kind of toy train based sausage delivery service.
Well, that's interesting, because in Hamburg they have this massive railway toy museum.
Oh,
which is over masses of floors, so maybe they've
perhaps
sideline.
It goes around kind of one of the kind of safety rails in front of the seats, and imagine that you're able, much like say Yosushi furnishes kind of fast food equivalents of raw Japanese fish, that there is some kind of sausage. I think it's a very exciting
Frankfurter or something.
You can choose your sausage.
Oh dear. Right, okay. Schalke, of course, after the extraordinary events there against St. Pauli, will be taking on Inter. They've got a new manager, haven't they, Schalke? Ralf Rangnick. And he'll be in charge for this game against Inter in the Champions League quarterfinals, which leads us on to our Serie A special. We've locked the doors.
Well, I'm actually really looking forward to this.
All right, then.
There's so much to talk about.
There is so much.
There is.
What, Barry, do you want to talk about first?
We should probably talk about Napoli's magnificent 4-3 victory over Lazio.
Oh, did you watch it?
I didn't watch it live. I've seen highlights since because people told me it was fantastic, yeah. And it was.
Sunday morning.
Mm.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was like the 80s all over again.
It was packed, San Paolo.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice and blue.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a little salty tear rolling down your cheek?
No, the 80s before me. But it looked like, you know, when you see those great shots of, you know, the old days of Careca and Maradona, and that's how it looked, kind of washed out, bright April sunshine and fellows in light blue jerseys running around it. Not the best of games from a technical point of view, but absolutely thrilling.
Yeah, and Lazio were 2-0 up.
Yep.
Should
just say the first goal from Mauri was sensational. Yes. Yeah.
And also, without Mauri, an odd thing, because Lazio are still in the sort of race to get in the Champions League, without him, they would be 13th. People question why Mauri is in the Italy squad at the moment, because he doesn't really do much. But he obviously makes the teams play a lot better.
Mm.
Interesting, when I was on the phone last time, I was talking about fish and the Italians. Mm. Mauri has a carp tattooed on his ankle, because apparently in Japan that means never giving up.
All right. Mm. The carp, an especially indomitable fish, is it?
Yeah, apparently, yeah.
But anyway, an astonishing game, getting back to the action. Cavani with his fourth hat-trick of the season,
well,
Edson Cavani.
Fifth, if you count the one against Indonesia.
Oh, okay.
For Uruguay.
All right. Let's count it.
He's scored, I think, 32 goals now for Napoli in all competitions.
25 in the league.
25, so he's equal with Toto Di Natale's capocannoniere, but he's taken fewer penalties, so he's the pure man.
Right, okay.
And he dedicated it to his newly born son, Battista, who's named after John the Baptist.
Oh, lovely.
Mm.
No effing and blinding there again, you see.
Well, yeah. He wears the number 7 because apparently it's God's number.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, I think it's always had a deep religious significance.
On the seventh day, God rested.
That's very true. That's very true. Seven. Cavani didn't, and of course, won it in magnificent fashion.
His third was fantastic.
Mm.
Took it on his chest and lobbed the keeper. And Muslera, the Lazio goalkeeper, is his Uruguayan teammate.
Mm.
And he said that he knows where Cavani shoots, where he scores, but he obviously knows that Cavani knows, and obviously he conceded a hat-trick.
Right. Mind games at the San Paolo. It was a fantastic morning of action. Sorry, Ben.
There was also a hilarious comedy own goal by Salvatore Aronica.
Yeah.
Yes, and a sending off and a big melee at the end.
It was a phantom goal as well. Sort of Jermaine Beckford like. Brocky had one which looked like it had crossed the line.
Yeah,
it was ruled out.
Very much so.
And Letito was furious.
Yeah, he certainly was. Letizia had been slapped around by
De Laurentiis.
By De Laurentiis and the build-up to this game, the Napoli and Lazio presence there. Aronica, of course, very much Alanis Morissette's favourite player, he said in predictable gag shocker. Anyway, that was a cracking game, and it does all leave Napoli, who previously had always bottled it in the big games, but this time they didn't, and it leaves them, come back from a 2-0 down, just 3 points behind Milan, and in the battle for the Serie A title, Milan having dispatched Inter Saturday night in the Milan derby. Your thoughts on that, James?
Well, going back just shortly to Napoli, because historical precedent suggests that the last time Napoli was second was 21 with 7 games remaining was 21 years ago. They were behind Milan and they overtook them and won the Scudetto.
Okay, Maradona was playing for them then.
Exactly, yeah. Bit of a difference.
All right. But still, you know, stranger things have happened, just 3 points between them.
Mm.
Mm, indeed.
They have a difficult run-in, though. Their last 2 games against Juventus and Inter, I think.
Inter are towards the end, yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, okay. There you go. Now, what about the derby, though?
The derby was... it lived up to all expectations. Obviously, the build-up was that it was Leonardo, the great traitor, having his first derby since joining Inter. And
did you see the big banner they gave him?
Yes, that was 5 months in the making. It was a masterpiece. I think it was the Comandos Tigre Ultra Group produced it, and it depicted the Last Supper. They were all, except they all had cans of beer or glasses of beer. And then the first message that it said was 30 pieces of silver, love at first sight. And then they rolled out another message which said, Leonardo, Judas Inter Ista.
Right.
There was lots of... He was insulted pretty from an hour and a half before the game started. And it was Leonardo da Vinci, Leonardo da Perdere. So Leonardo from the winner, Leonardo the loser.
Right, because it was, of course, Leonardo who painted the masterpiece Last Supper, just for any...
No, of course, but I remember when he went, you said that there wouldn't be much friction, Jim. I remember you saying that...
I was wrong.
Yeah, the last time...
That surprised me how virulent and how vociferous.
Yeah, the last time, his last game at San Siro with Milan, they produced a huge banner which said, simply, thank you, Leonardo, because they thought he had been pushed out and was being bullied by Berlusconi, because after they lost the derby to Inter last year, and then they went out of the Champions League, Berlusconi never wasted an opportunity, like political functions, did he, to slag off Leonardo.
It's interesting that Pato, who scored and played brilliantly, dating Silvio Berlusconi's daughter Barbara, they went for a private dinner afterwards. And it sounds quite
well. It's now out in the open. It had been very much, under wraps, this, because it's an interesting situation, isn't it? She's probably, according to Papa Silvio, going to be taking over.
Yeah, and La Repubblica said Pato's performance was barbaric.
Oh, because she's called Barbara.
Yeah.
And he gave you know, her the little signs after he scored, and then afterwards the press said, do you want to dedicate this to anyone? And the press bloke said, no, we're only going to talk about the game, because there's obviously something they don't want to broach. Berlusconi as well was saying, next question, please, if anybody asks him about the fact that his daughter's going out with a footballer. But Pato did manage to say, I think you all saw where I was looking after I scored, and it was very much...
Pato's first goal was, he scored after 43 seconds, so he instantly put Inter on the back foot. And you'd naturally think that was probably the quickest in the history of the derby, but it was only the fifth
really?
Quickest.
Yeah. Really?
I think Mazzarella scored something one after 10 seconds. Altafini scored one after 20 seconds. So it's just ridiculous.
Right. Producer Ben shouting, is he that quick with Barbara? But I don't think we need to bring things down. While Babs and Alex were off having their private cena, where did the rest of the team go to celebrate?
They went to Fingers, which is not a club. It's a Japanese fusion restaurant owned by Clarence Seedorf. And
nice one.
Apparently Silvio Berlusconi went as well, but he's not too keen on Japanese food, so they had to...
Not too keen on Fingers.
Not too keen on... Well, yeah, his trial starts,
I can't believe so,
on Wednesday.
Clarence Seedorf has a fish restaurant called Fingers.
Well, Japanese...
it's a bird's eye. It's a bird's eye paradise, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm.
But it does seem to be... Gattuso, as you say, that, you know, it led to our whole fish conversation the other day. And so many... Roberto Di Matteo had his pizzeria. And, you know, it's a big thing. Art Deco says, dear Mr. James Horncastle, and wants to talk about Allegri. Is our Allegri and Gerrard related? I am, of course, thinking of that troubled, distracted, thousand-yard squint. He's trying to associate their looks with states of mind. You can just picture Allegri with that very enigmatic face he often wears. He says he thinks it's a combination of the hardships of the world and the moment just before squeezing one out, whereas Gerrard is maybe that with a hint of what's my pin code. And he talks about other midfielders and what their faces express. Riquelme, he suggests, is an I am not here look, whereas Zidane is mostly you are not here because I am 3 seconds into the future. It's interesting, isn't it? And he then posits Art Deco that this is a very much a peculiarity of midfielders, these kind of faces of destiny that they often wear. Allegri, of course, having been a very successful...
Regista.
Yeah. But anyway, there you go. Allegri, who's been rewarded with a pay rise, massive pay rise. He's doubled his wages, Berlusconi. So there you go. Well done to him. Now, in other news, Udinese lost surprisingly with Lecce, but hang on to fourth place just ahead of Lazio. Juventus won at Roma.
With 9 players out.
Yeah.
As well. Who would have
Storari,
thought?
Though, arguably doing better than Buffon, who hasn't really shone. It hurts me to say this of late.
And Storari is kind of Roma's bête noire, because he's Roman. He supports Roma. I think he came through the academy as well. And last year he was at Sampdoria. And when Roma were obviously chasing to win the Scudetto, Sampdoria came to the Olimpico and won, partly because Storari was so good. And then obviously yesterday, he was excellent again, making 3 fantastic saves. And Roma blew a chance, really, because when Udinese lost, they play Udinese next week, and they could have got back into the Champions League positions. Luckily, their prospective new owner, Thomas Di Benedetto, had flown back to America after chipping his tooth.
Oh, did he chip his tooth?
Yeah, apparently he'd gone to...
Fish?
Possibly. Although he might, yeah, on a bone.
Right, okay.
But he'd gone to Florence and apparently met Franco Baldini, the England general manager, about possibly coming over to Roma.
Right, those very much the rumours. Storari says that if the manager's not blind, he's going to be the first choice in goal from now on. Do you think they're going to sell Buffon, in a word, yes or no?
No.
Oh, really? Interesting. Now... we're going to come on to Sampdoria news in a second, that big game with Chievo. Should also mention that other results saw two managers fired, Pasquale Marino at Parma, who lost at home to Bari, was it? Or no, away to Bari.
This actually kind of feeds into the match-fixing debate.
At home to Bari, yeah.
Because what happened after the game was there was a scuffle in the tunnel. Three Parma players went to confront a Bari defender called Marco Rossi, who is a bit of an antagonist. He was the guy who got punched by Christian Kivu, and then Ibrahimovic gave him the kung fu chop, which meant he got banned for the derby. And Rossi was heard shouting, "They're accusing me of just being a professional." And basically what had happened was Bari had taken a lead at the Tardini. Parma had equalised through Amari, and then Bari scored a winner in the 93rd minute. Now, what's being deduced by the press is that the Parma players had said, "Why weren't you just playing for a draw? Why don't we just sell for a draw?"
Mm. And Bari are all but relegated, and they're 10 points from safety.
Even with that win, they're 9 points away from safety. So they had nothing really to gain, and that just feeds into this culture of settling for a result that doesn't hurt your chances.
Yeah.
Well, to the surprise of absolutely no one, the Chievo. Game yesterday finished 0-0. I was actually watching some of it, and it didn't really look like they were going at it hammer and tong, did they?
Right. Well, no, it didn't. But then Sampdoria never score. I mean, they really don't.
They haven't scored away from home since November.
Right. Okay. And Chievo not big scorers either, particularly. The report from the federal investigators who attended this game to check out whether there was anything untoward about it. Let's just see. Yeah, it was a game played with apparently in regular fashion, but there was evidence, however, of little impegno agonistico, a little physical effort. Yeah, which probably sums it up. But basically they're saying not a fix per se, just two teams who are not putting any effort in.
I noticed Brescia next week's already to draw his odds on.
Oh, really?
So that's another one that could be worth looking at.
Mm. Mm. All right, Barry, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Sure.
All right, then.
I'm not. I wasn't surprised.
No.
It's funny.
It is amusing. Yeah. Talk about two managers going. The other one being poor old Cersei Cosmi. The gonk-like figure of Cersei Cosmi gone at Palermo. He's been fired by the man who hired him a month ago and replaced by the man who was fired to make way for his hiring, Delio Rossi. I think that's clear.
Yeah, and he said, Zamperini said that he's not into self-harming. But
right.
I think he obviously is. He sacked Cersei Cosmi. He came out afterwards saying that Javier Pastore, Palermo's great playmaker, hadn't been... he was on the bench, primarily because he'd been playing with Argentina in midweek and played, I think, a full 90 minutes or something like that. And Zamperini had apparently gone up to Cosmi before the game and said, "Why isn't he playing?" "Well, if we don't win, you're sacked." And pretty much lived up to his word.
Man of his word.
And yes, Palermo have a terrible record against Catania. I think they've lost their last three games in the Sicilian derby when they've gone to the Massimino. And yeah, I love Cosmi because he's...
Well, Perugia days, that was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he's kind of responsible for bringing Saadi Gaddafi over.
Oh, yeah.
And he obviously...
Wasn't he not responsible? Wasn't he the one that actually didn't let him play, even though the president of Perugia
another
was trying
reason to
get
like him
to, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but Cosmi...
He gave me pizza as well.
Oh. Really?
Yeah, he did. Anyway, Cersei Cosmi.
I sat next to Cersei at San Siro once, and he told me a great anecdote about when he was working at Perugia. Gaucci, the president, gave him a huge black truffle, was it?
Yeah.
And it was so big that he had to try and get it into his car. And when he got it into his car, it was so heavy that the wheels nearly went...
Right.
And he couldn't drive away with it.
But truffles are really expensive. They're about £1,000 for a kilo.
Yeah.
Right.
Cosmi did then... He did say, "I'm not going to play Gaddafi." Mind you, he did help by getting a doping ban.
Yeah.
But then when Cosmi went to Udinese, Gaddafi went with him. And there was quite a good expose last week from the former doorman of Udinese's hotel. He sort of lifted the lid on Gaddafi's time at Udinese. He had a room, especially for his favourite dog, Dina the Doberman. And her handler used to sleep on the floor, whereas Dina used to sleep on the bed. And Gaddafi's sort of having a private jet on hire all the time to go to the Crazy Horse in Paris, have caviar and Krug sent up. Apparently he had 5 kilos of caviar brought over to Udine. And obviously Udine being a small town, it's like, where do we find caviar?
Yeah, extraordinary. Extraordinary. There you go. Happy days. Happy days. Now gone, of course. Optusports point out that Maurizio Zamperini, now president of Palermo, previously at Venezia, has managed to fire 35 managers in his career, 18 of them in 9 seasons alone at Palermo. Woof. And with that, I think we come to the end of today's Football Weekly. Many thanks to James Horcastle for making it in today. Barry Glendenny, lovely to see you too.
I'd just like to wish my mother, my dear mother, a very happy birthday.
Excellent.
I think she still listens to this. Good. For you mainly, not me.
Really? Hello, Mrs. G. Sean Ingle, thanks to you as well. And producer Ben, lovely stuff. We're back on Thursday, as I'm sure you know. Have a super time till then, and bye for now.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.